Sita Goswami said.
Sri Sita Goswami said.
Emperor Yudhisthira was administered generously to everyone.
Emperor Yudhisthira administered generously to everyone.
During his reign.
During his reign.
He was exactly like his father.
He was exactly like his father.
He had no personal ambition.
He had no personal ambition.
And was freed from all sorts of sense gratification. Because of his continuous service unto the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna.
Because of his continuous service unto the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna.
Okay, so Prabhu, if I could just interrupt for a moment. Welcome everybody to our Srimad Bhagavatam class. Anybody that came in late, Dinesh or Prabhu is giving class this morning, and it's on Canto 1, Chapter 12, Verse 4. We're just about to report. So we need everybody at this time to please mute themselves. Okay? And Dinesh, just give me 1 second to switch over. Mm-hmm. We're ready.
Purport. As mentioned in our introduction, there is a need for the science of Krishna in human society, for all the suffering humanity in the world, and we simply request the leading personalities of all nations to take to the science of Krishna for their own good, for the good of society, and for the good of all people of the world. Unquote. So it is confirmed herein by the example of Maharaj Yudhisthira, the personality of goodness. In India, the people hanker after Ram Raj because the personality of Godhead was the ideal king, and all other kings or emperors in India controlled the destiny of the world for the prosperity of every living being who took birth on earth. Here the word Brajaha is significant. The etymological import of that word is, quote, that which is born, unquote. On the earth, there are many species of life, from the aquatics up to the perfect human beings, and all are known as prajas. Lord Brahma, the creator of this particular universe, is known as the Prajapati king. Is known as the Prajapati because he is the grandfather of all who have taken birth. Thus, praja is used in a broader sense than it is now used. The king represents all living beings, the aquatics, plants, trees, reptiles, birds, animals, and man. Every one of them is a part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, referenced there in Bhagavad Gita 14.4. And the king, being the representative of the Supreme Lord, is duty-bound to give proper protection to every one of them. This is not the case with the presidents and dictators of this demoralized system of administration, where the lower animals are given no protection, while the higher animals are given so-called protection. But this great science, which can be learned only by one who knows the science of Krishna. But this is a great science, which can be learned only by one who knows the science of Krishna. By knowing the science of Krishna, one can become the most perfect man in the world, and unless one has knowledge in this science, all qualifications and doctorate diplomas acquired by academic education are spoiled and useless. Maharaj Yudhisthira knew this science of Krishna very well, for it is stated here that by continuous cultivation of this science, or by continuous devotional service to Lord Krishna, he acquired the qualification of administering the state. The father is sometimes seemingly cruel to the son, but that does not mean that the father has lost the qualification to be father. A father is always a father because he is as good because he always has the good of the son at heart. The father wants every one of his sons to become better than himself. Therefore, a king like Maharaj Yudhisthira, who was the personality of goodness, wanted everyone under his administration, especially the human beings who have better developed consciousness, to become devotees of Lord Krishna, so that everyone can become free from the trifles of material existence. His motto of administration was all good for the citizens. His motto of administration was all good for the citizens. For as personified goodness, he knew perfectly well what is actually good for them. He conducted the administration on that principle and not on the Rakshashi, demoniac principle of sense gratification. As an ideal king, he had no personal ambition, and there was no place for sense gratification because all of his senses at all times were engaged in the loving service of the Supreme Lord, which includes the partial service to the living beings who form the parts and parcels of the complete whole. Those who are busy rendering service to the parts and parcels, leaving aside the whole, only spoil time and energy, as one does when watering the leaves of a tree without watering the root. If water is poured on the root, the leaves are enlivened perfectly and automatically. But if water is poured on the leaves only, the whole energy is spoiled. Maharaj Yudhisthira, therefore, was constantly engaged in the service of the Lord, and thus the parts and parcels of the Lord, the living beings under his careful administration, were perfectly attended with all comforts in this life and all progress in the next. That is a way of perfect management of state administration. Omagana Tamanandasa Gananjana Shalaka Chakshun Militamina Tasma Shigurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobisam Sapitame Utale Svayamupakadamayam Tatati Swapatantikam. So this purport gives us information of how to properly run the government. Although we must admit that there are some things in this purport that will not be liked by many people in today's society. The Prabhupada is using the example of a father. Although sometimes he is seemingly unkind to his children, still, this does not disqualify him from being father, but actually it is his qualification. Why? Because he is doing good for the children. The father, having more experience and understanding, knowing what is the results of activity and so on, carefully guides and protects his children so that they will not do harm to themselves. Although the child may be disappointed or angry at the father for such restriction, it's actually for the child's own good. So Lord Krishna, understanding the nature of human beings or living beings in this material world, arranged a system by which all living entities could be guided and protected and advance in life so that they can actually achieve the result that they want, which is happiness. Both happiness in this life and in the next, making progress, spiritual progress. However, in today's world, because the citizens are steeped in the modes of passion and ignorance, if one tries to restrict them only to goodness, they would be very unhappy. Nonetheless, it's the duty of the state to give such guidance and direction to the praja, because this is the duty of the administrative head. As Prabhupada mentions here, the modern administrators, they are simply interested in themselves. They are using their position for stealing from the people and squirreling away money so that when they leave office, they can simply retire and live a life of luxury. For example, we had the Bhutos, Benazir Bhutto. She was the president of Pakistan. And her husband, he was known as Mr. 10%. This being the his commission that he took from all businesses, any kind of business or company that wanted to do business in Pakistan, they had to pay him an extra 10% in order to be able to do business there. So in this way, the Bhuttos, they stocked away about hundreds of millions of dollars, maybe up to several billion. But in the end, of course, we see that it did little good to Ms. Bhutto because she was assassinated and could not actually enjoy that money. Unfortunately, this situation is not an exception, but it's basically the rule in society nowadays. And even if the leaders are not avaricious, sometimes they are forced by the demonic powers in the world. There was one very interesting book called Confessions of an Economic Hitman, in which the author, he explained how he was, let's see, his job was to go to third world countries and convince them to take big loans for developing their infrastructure so that their country could come into the 20th century, become prosperous, and they painted a very rosy picture that with this money you'll have ports and airports, you'll have nice roads, you'll have business parks, and your general prosperity will increase. So it all sounds good in theory, but in practice there's actually very little benefit realized by the people of the country. And in fact, the arrangement was made to give loans in excess of what could be comfortably paid back so that the country would then become an economic hostage. And John Perkins, the author of this book, would say that sometimes they would go to the leaders of the countries and they would say something like, since you can't pay back your loans, we're going to ask you to support us when we have a vote in the UN. We need your votes. Or, do other things, allow our companies to come into your country and drill for oil or whatever they wanted to do. And just in case, Mr. President, you're thinking that you don't want to do this, here, I'll tell you what. In one pocket, I've got a check for $100 million for you and your family. But in the other pocket, I've got a bullet with your name on it. So in this way, they got a choice, A or B. And, of course, most people, they take choice A because they realize that even if they take choice B and they try to protect their citizens, that the guy who's going to come after them is probably just going to sell out also. So we see that this is actually how world politics works, and if you don't cooperate with them, you wind up like the leader of Libya or the leader of, Argentina? These various countries that become the enemy of the United States. In any case, the point is that modern society, people are generally very self-interested, and they will serve themselves, the leaders particularly, will serve themselves at the expense of the people in general. And this is happening not only at the leadership position, but anybody with any position of authority. I was... On one of my recent flights, I was sitting next to an Indian man, a dentist who's retiring from the United States because his, due to the economic crisis, his number of his patients has gone down such that he can't even maintain his office. So I asked him if he was going to go back to India and retire there. And he said, actually, India has become such a place that you can't really live there comfortably, because everybody with any position, they want to exploit you. And he said, even in fact, like the local policeman, he says, you know, he comes for his graft, and if you don't pay him, then he says, well, I'll have to look the other way when the burglars come to your home. So this is now going on at every level of society. Why? Because there is no more goodness. Actually, the description here of Maharaj Yudhisthira of being such an ideal king is due to the fact that he not only was situated in goodness, goodness personified, the son of goodness personified, but he was also a great devotee of the Lord. And because he was always engaged in the Lord's devotional service, he was fully satisfied. Therefore, his self-interest was simply the Lord's interest. And that by engaging in the Lord's devotional service according to his duty, he found whatever satisfaction that he needed. Of course, his duty was as the king, the executive head, who was to see that everything would go on nicely. So such examples are wanted in the world today to show actually how we can live happily in this world. We see that people becoming unhappy or frustrated with things, they for example, like in Europe, in Spain or in Greece, England or Ireland, people becoming unhappy, they take to the streets in protest, thinking that, okay, we will force the government to change the situation, that what they're doing is no longer tolerable, we have to make protest. But what they don't realize is that actually, the government, in fact, is not really responsible, but the people themselves are, because they've become so sinful, so addicted to sinful activity, that the karma that they have developed is coming back to them through the agency of their leaders. And the actual solution to these problems of the world is for the people themselves to come to Sattva-gun. What people want? People want a world of sattva-gun. They want to be happy. They want to have prosperity. They want to have satisfaction. They want to have comforts and so on. And these things are actually a description of the results of sattva-gun. The problem is that nobody's in sattva-gun. They're in rajagun and tamagun. And consequently, they would get the results of rajagun and tamagun, which are distress, unhappiness, destruction, and so on. So this is the need of the hour, to help people to actually understand how to achieve these things, how to actually adjust things so that people can become happy, satisfied, and everybody is cared for. Modern society is such that people are, again, everyone is self-interested. And as long as their particular circumstance is okay, then everything is okay. They may see that some unfortunate people, they don't have a job, or they no longer have a house, they're living on the street, but they shrug their shoulders and say, well, that's unfortunate to them. What can I do? Maybe I can give in charity a little bit or something like that, but they don't know what else to do. This comes from the fact that people no longer understand actually how the world works. But the world is operating according to the gunas. So what is needed is leadership who shows people how to live. Actually, people in general, they have no idea how to live except for what they're showed what to do. And we have a very good indoctrination system called public school, which indoctrinates our children into how this world works and how to find their place in it. So the children go to school from Monday through Friday. They in this way become conditioned to going Monday through Friday to work. They go from 8 a.m. to 3 or 4 p.m. In this way they become conditioned to such working hours. And they also become indoctrinated to do what they're told, to repeat back to the teacher what the teacher wants to hear. And in this way, they're trained how to live. So with such an indoctrination, when the children get out of school, they don't know anything different. Interesting, I went one day this last week with Vivaswan Prabhu in Tampa. I went with him to the University of South Florida to distribute books for one day. And it's just the beginning of the fall semester and many new freshman students there. And I took a few minutes just to sit and observe what these students are doing and just imagine a little bit what they're thinking. That they're coming to this university with the idea that, you know, I get my university degree, then I'll be able to get my job, and I'll be able to get my house, and have my career, and my this, and my that, and so on and so on. And although, of course, as many students, they're sometimes aware of the injustices of the world and are offended by that, there were different tables set up in the campus to educate the kids in different kinds of things. Some of them calling for environmental awareness or protest or, you know, protest against wars and so on like that. And although they may be aware of these injustices, they're actually not being taught what the source of them is, nor what the actual solution is. So there's a great need for such an education. Not only education, but for a alternative way of living. Because people in general, they cannot create how they're going to live. They're given a way to live, and then they, within those circumstances, they try to make the best bargain that they can. But the trained agent of the Lord, the executive head of state, like Maharaj Yudhisthira, he would see that actually it's a duty of the Kshatriya to see that every person is properly engaged. And this means so that they're working according to their nature, and so that every person has what they need to live a simple and decent life and to learn about spiritual life. But our heads of state are no longer interested in that. So therefore, it's going to require one devotee or several devotees to again step up and begin to make some propaganda, spiritual propaganda, to the people in general to educate them in the principles of spiritual life, which are the most practical instructions for how to live. So yesterday I was at the Detroit Sunday Feast, and there's one devotee there, Tribhupanath, I think was his name. And he was telling me he's planning on running for Congress here in Michigan for the purpose of preaching, just as previously our devotees ran for office in the In God We Trust Party. When I was just a new devotee in Gainesville in 1973, Amarendra Prabhu, temple president, was engaged in running for the mayor's office. But principally, he was using that platform to preach Krishna consciousness, and very boldly. If you know him, you know he's such a bold devotee, fearless. He would get up and he would just tell everyone, you know, this is the problem. The problem is the sinful activity. The problem is meat eating, illicit sex, and so on. And if we actually want to be happy, we have to curtail these activities and learn how to become satisfied by the practice of the Lord's devotional service. And when I was in Alachua also this week talking with the devotees, and they were saying that, some were saying that Rupanuga Prabhu, Balavanta Prabhu, who was, I think he ran for mayor of Atlanta at one time, also on the In God We Trust ticket, and he's also run for state representative in Florida at least one other time, that he wants to become active again in politics and to reestablish this In God We Trust party. So certainly this is needed because people, they can recognize more and more. They're seeing the problems. They see how difficult things are. They see how the economy is going. And they can recognize that the current administration, all the politicians, are actually working against them. Now we have, for example, I hear states, governors of various states, like in Wisconsin, you all may know, the governor there was trying to abolish the unions. Wisconsin is a state in which actually the unions got their start. And then I was told that the governor in Florida is also trying to do such things of levy more taxes on people and eliminate jobs, eliminate benefits. Other governors also are doing the same thing. So people are seeing that this modern government is actually working against them. But what else? What do they know what to do besides to go march in the street? So it's going to require the devotees to teach the people how. What is the source of the problem? The source of the problem isn't what we think it is, but the actual source of the problem is tamagun, rajagun. We're getting the results of these gunas. And if we want happiness, then we must come to sattvagun. And automatically, actually, if the people will take up this practice of Krishna consciousness, raise themselves up to sattvagun, these problems, somehow or other, as if by magic, actually will just dissolve. They'll simply go away. And this is actually the only solution for it. It's not a matter of having more conventions or you know, protests or meetings of any kind. Those things are actually not going to eliminate the problem. And we see that. We see those of us with some experience, you see, after 2, 3, 4, 5 decades, that things continue to go on the same way all the time, perhaps even getting worse and worse, despite the fact that they're having all of these so-called planning commissions. So Prabhupada, of course, was understood all of these points, and he spoke and wrote very aggressively about this, that these planning commissions, they will not save anybody. All of this education, PhDs and so on, these things are useless without Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada compared it to zeros, so many zeros, that all of these material endeavors are a bunch of zeros. And unless and until we add Krishna as the one in front of those zeros, they will remain worthless. So it is, Krishna consciousness is the only panacea for all the problems. It's not only the solution, but the panacea. It's what people are looking for. And this actually bodes very well for us, that if we will take the trouble to create some specific propaganda, meaning written materials for this, to educate people in these problems and help people learn and understand how the world works and how to deal with these problems, let's say we have a wonderful opportunity for doing that. And of course, as people suffer more and more, they become more and more willing to listen. So it only bodes increasingly well for preaching, as the rascal politicians continue to do their nefarious activities. So we should take advantage of these opportunities, and we should orient our preaching to go out and speak to people about these points so that we can introduce them to the solution, introduce them, or rather educate them to understanding the problem and the solution of the problem. Okay, anyway, why don't we stop there and we can have some discussion.
Oh, let me see, am I unmuted?
You're unmuted.
Oh, okay, Jai Prabhuji. Very nice class. Thank you. So I was thinking as you were speaking, it makes so much sense to a devotee. It's kind of like a no-brainer what the solution is. But we're talking about educating those that have some position in leadership. But realistically, how can we expect them to ever understand if they're not a devotee? It seems that, you know, again, to us, it's so practical and makes so much sense. But on the other hand, it seems that if they're not devotees, it doesn't seem like they'll ever understand. What do you think in that regard?
Will they understand or be able to do anything? They may understand,
both.
But politically, they may find themselves in a politically impossible situation.
But I guess both. Do you think that they would even do you think they could even understand these concepts, what we're talking about? It's so, to us, it's so obvious and so basic, but to them, it's so, without being religiously bound, spiritually bound, with some foundation, it seems that they would never understand.
Well, perhaps they will, perhaps they will not, but it's our duty to actually go to teach them, right?
I agree.
Is anybody there in your state of Hawaii going to the legislators and speaking with them about anything? I know in Ukraine and Russia, some of the devotees, they do this political preaching. One devotee in particular that I know, he goes to the various, say that political leaders. He's made up a business card, introduces himself, and of course they, you know, if he can get 2 minutes, he's lucky. Sometimes he'll speak to different aides and so on. And there's other devotees who sponsor books and CDs and so on. So he'll give various literature materials to these people. If he can't speak to the person directly, he'll leave it for them in their office. And I've known him now for about 6 years, and in 6 years, of course, he's not successful with everybody, but he's been very successful with some. And he's taken me to meet some of these people and to speak with them, and they listen with great interest. So, you know, it's a kind of thing where you just have to keep chipping away at it, you know, until we can actually get their attention. Now, that's, of course, on one level. You know, those people, even if they get it, they understand it, then, okay, what can they do? That's another thing. You know, as far as actual solution to the problems, it's more important for the people in general to understand it, because it's the karma of the people that's building up. And so I think it has to be, you know, we have to carry out our efforts in all levels. And I personally also think that we need some new literature. Not to say that there's anything wrong with Prabhupada's books by any stretch, but literature that's devoted. Somebody's got the microphone on. Literature that's specifically oriented towards these various modern situations and. You know, how the practice of Krishna consciousness is the solution to the problem.
That's a nice answer. I was thinking, as you were speaking also, and I mean, when Prabhupada came to America to spread Krishna consciousness, for all intents and purposes, we were so degraded, it was impossible. But the impossible became possible because Prabhupada was acting under the order of his guru, Maharaj Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, who was acting under the order of his guru, who were ultimately empowered by Mahaprabhu. And even Prabhupada said, you know, please, you know, how will they ever understand my words? You know, please, you know, he prayed to Krishna to give him potency. So I guess in the same way, even though it seems impossible, which it does seem impossible, And practically it is impossible, but the impossible becomes possible because this is all part of Lord Chaitanya's Leela. And as you say, if we simply go act and we preach and just have faith in Krishna, that, you know, this is the golden, Chaitanya's golden era, that even what may seem so daunting and without a modicum of chance, it can actually happen. And we just have to become Krishna's, Lord Chaitanya and Prabhupada's instruments, and do just as you're saying, approach people and preach and just have faith.
Yeah. And Hari Nam Sankirtan. Krishna is personally present in his name. So when we go out and do Hari Nam, we are inviting the Lord. We're bringing the Lord here to deal with this. So it's, that's the wonderful thing. It's like an adventure movie, you know, like one of those whodunits, like Indiana Jones. You know, you wonder, you see the circumstances and it looks like totally impossible. You know, he can't get out of this one, you know. But somehow or other he does, because he's the hero. Well, so it's the same thing. It's an adventure. We don't, you know, you can't imagine how is the situation going to change so dramatically from what it is today to, you know, a upsurge of people taking up Hari Nam Sankirtan and taking up this Krishna consciousness. But we should act with faith in that, because we know that Lord Chaitanya, it's his desire. And so that's what makes it an adventure. It's going to happen. And just like, we can take the example of Kurukshetra. It was seemingly impossible that the Pandavas, that they were going to win that battle. But somehow or other, all five of them escaped. And, despite the fact that hundreds of millions of other men were killed. So the chances against that are tremendous. But it's possible because Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Jai, thank you, Hari Prabhu.
Jai, thank you, Prabhuji. Yeah, very nice.
Dhaneshwar Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Jai Madhava
Hare Prabhu.
I think we need more publications, small books, this bridge books that address topical issues, social, political, whatever, trace it back to the spiritual root problem, the misidentification of the body and the law of karma, which is... it's kind of a duh for us, but it's I guess a controversial subject for some. An odd side note. I was listening to Prabhupada preaching in 1966 in New York, and it's a wonderful series on the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and at one point, and it's sort of a free flow to it, but I mean, it's amazing the what was coming through Prabhupada at that time. Anyway, at some point, he started talking about Yudhisthira and how he hesitated to tell the lie that Krishna wanted him to tell on the battlefield of Kurukshetra to Drona. Because they went to Drona and they said, because some elephant by the same name as his son was killed, right? You know the story.
Yeah.
And they came to Drona and they said, Asatana is dead. Some of the warriors from this other side came and told him that. And then Drona...
No, Yudhisthira had to tell him.
Because
he knew Yudhisthira would not tell a lie, so they asked Yudhisthira to tell the story, to tell him that.
Well, here's the way I tell it. Is that he was approached and told that, and then Drona said, "I won't believe it unless I hear Yudhisthira say it."
Uh-huh.
Okay, and then they go looking for Yudhisthira, but Krishna's telling Yudhisthira, "You have to tell him this. This is how he's going to be taken away from this battle. You're going to tell him that his son is dead, and then he's going to give up the fight. That's how it's going to be done." And then Yudhisthira, he wouldn't do it. And so
Well, he did. He agreed to it, but he was at the same time he was saying, "Well, I've never told a lie," and he says, "That's exactly why we need you to tell him to do this. You need to tell him this." So then, Prabhupada, in this talk, he's saying that Yudhisthira was a mundane moralist, in the sense that he would not give up this. But, you know, this kind of long-standing run that he had for never telling a lie. He was attached to that. And he didn't want to, you know, so he arranged for, there were bugleists, and there were men on the battlefield that would blow bugles and trumpets and different things to get the blood going for the Kshatriyas, so they would get, you know, keep the excitement going during the battle. And so he had them come up behind him, and he had an arrangement with them that they would blast away their horns at a precise moment. He would give them a kind of a hand signal. And so he came up to Drona and he goes, Dronacharya, Asvatam, and then he did the hand signal, and the horns blast away while he says, the elephant. And then when the horns die down, is dead. You know, so that's how he did it. And his chariot never touched the ground up to that point, and his chariot dropped to the ground. But Drona accepted it. He heard it from Yudhisthira. He accepted it. He removed his his helmet. He left his bow, sat down, took a lotus position, went into some kind of trance, and they separated his head from his body. Mm-hmm. But Prabhupada faulted Yudhisthira as a mundane moralist, and he glorified Arjuna, although Arjuna resisted the idea of staying in the battlefield and killing his worshipable masters and elders. He agreed in the end. He agreed to follow the directions of Krishna. And that's the difference between mundane morality and a devotee.
Okay. Connect the dots for us. Why do you bring this up?
Well, Yudhisthira is mentioned in the purport. I mean, Prabhupada's glorifying Yudhisthira. I mean, he's glorified in the verse. He's glorified in the purport. And also, Krishna personally chose him. You know, he decided that Yudhisthira was going to be emperor of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So there's more than, you know, it's layered. It's not a black and white. You know, sometimes we take Prabhupada, what he says, black and white, but there's all kinds of shades of gray. You know, there's things that are said at one time, things that are said at another time.
Sure. Well, the emphasis in this verse and commentary is Yudhisthira's ability as a leader. And, you know, what's significant about him as being a leader is that he's a man of, although he's a king, in so-called Raja Gun, he's also a devotee of the Lord who's transcendental to the Gunas, and because of his situation in devotional service, he has no personal interest to satisfy. That is, he's doing his duty. He's doing his duty as a king simply for the benefit of the citizens. And this is the kind of people that the world needs now more than ever. You know, because practically nobody is selfless in service today. And everyone is feeling the result. So, how are we going to get such men? I've got a question I'd like to ask. Maybe somebody can answer this. So, Yudhisthira is coming in the line of Kshatriya kings. Prior to him, there was his father, right? His name's escaping me. What? Pandu. So Pandu is the king, right? And but during Pandu's time, although he was supposed to be emperor of the world, so we had characters like Kamsa, who were, practically speaking, right next door, who were not following the principles of religion, in fact, who were, doing so many terrible things. Like Kamsa was, he ordered all the children killed within the last 10 days to be killed and so on. So how is it that Pandu didn't come there and take care of the situation? This question has been on my mind. Maybe some of you devotees can offer an answer to that.
I can take a stab at it.
Go ahead.
We just heard recently from Hanumaprasheka Swami that when there was a battle between Kamsa and Jarasandha, he had this powerful elephant.
Kamsa and Jarasandha?
Yep.
Oh, okay. And I thought Jarasandha was one of his men.
That's correct. Yep. So originally Jarasandha went to try and conquer his kingdom. There was an elephant that could kill 100 other elephants that got loose from Jarasandha's camp and went over to make havoc at Kamsa's palace and kingdom. And then when Kamsa got so angry that he took this elephant, whirled him around, killed him, and threw him across the river back over to Jarasandha. So Jarasandha thought, oh, this is somebody to be reckoned with. And they made an alliance, and then, Jarasandha offered the two daughters. And that's, how they got a family alliance. So when Maharaj Yudhisthira was going to do the Rajasuya sacrifice, that Krishna informed him that you need to take care of this Jarasandha. Krishna took care of Kamsa, and then Jarasandha was taken care of by, of course, Bhima, on the behest of Yudhisthira. So was that... they were the stumbling block. They were the ones that were so powerful. So even though Pandu, yes, he was the emperor of the world, but still these guys were the stumbling block. So that's why when Yudhisthira was going to do the Rajasuya, he had to take care of them before anything else would happen.
So you're saying Pandu, even though Pandu was the so-called emperor of the world, he actually couldn't keep the peace?
No, it was because when Maharaj Yudhisthira was going to do the Rajasuya sacrifice, he had to actually conquer the entire world.
That came later. So my question is about the local politics at this time. If Pandu was emperor of the world, the Pandavas and the Yadus, right, they're trying to get the seat, right? Who's going to be the emperor of the world? Because the seat of power is Hastinapur at that time. But obviously then Pandu, he had not subdued Kamsa and all those other antagonistic kings. So and then of course, or did that happen after Pandu died and while the children were still young?
Yeah, I don't know about the sequence.
Okay. All right.
But I was listening to another discussion. Kridananda Maharaj was explaining about that. He thought with the references that are given in the Mahabharata that Kamsa probably was around along with Jarasandha at the time of Pandu. But maybe they just weren't such a big problem that he needed to conquer the kingdom.
Yeah. It could be that they kept their heads low because Pandu was there, but then after Pandu passed away, then they were able to, there was nobody to oppose them, huh?
Yeah, maybe so. If I find the reference, I can send it to you.
Thanks. Anything else?
Yes. Thank you. A long time I get to hear your class. Very nice.
Thank you.
Mother Kansari. And you mentioned about how in this day and age people are revolting and they're going out in masses, mm-hmm. and that's the way they can speak up. But actually, it's mentioned in the 12th canto that that is the only power left in Kali Yuga, and advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like
Gandhari, your microphone is fading a little bit. Coming, it comes and goes.
Yes, I think it don't seem to have a very good connection.
Okay, that's better.
Now I'm better. Now I'm closer.
Okay, that's a little better, yeah.
Okay, so it seems like so Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took advantage of that, that this is a recommended method, that in Kali Yuga the only means, or the main means of power of spoken of the public is through congregation gathering. So it is from recommended in the 12th canto, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu proved that. Mahatma Gandhi also in one sense was how he did that was through the power of congregation and mm-hmm. even the peace, even through peace without, and same thing we saw just recently in Egypt also. It was quite amazing that this is what is in line or requested or recommended in Kali Yuga, that that's how, and Srila Prabhupada has predicted that people will be rushing to our forest, to our farms, because there will be so much harassed by the government. But let's be ready. But I'm just saying that that's the point, that it is recommended for Kali Yuga because there's no other means of people's voice heard.
Yeah.
Even though it's there is so-called democracy.
Because the leaders, they don't care, whatever, you know, the people can protest, but they'll do what they want anyway. So it's actually, you know, it's impotent. I went one time, when was it, after the Gulf War, I think, the second Gulf War in the year, could have been that time, I'm not quite sure. Anyway, it was after one of the wars, I went to one of those marches. One, out of curiosity, and two, I was feeling some instigation to do that, right, to lend my voice to it. But when I was there in the middle of it, I thought, this is ridiculous. This is like, it's completely impotent, you know. You march in the street, but so what, you know? And I realized from that the only way to give that thing any potency is for those people who are going out to the street, if they would take up the chanting of the holy name and bring Krishna there by invoking his holy name, that would actually make a difference. So,
the spiritual aspect, but the point also was that that is the only strength left in the masses, in the congregation. But, you know, they don't have the right motive. That's the problem. We know that. But at least it brings the power of the voice. That's what I was trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
Like there is a power in the number. Because
I think it has to be like Lord Chaitanya's civil disobedience. Then it can have some more potency.
Definitely. That.
That's what I advocate. Go ahead.
I want to thank Vidagdha Madhva Prabhu for bringing up that comment. I never heard that and it's so nice to hear from Srila Prabhupada that. But it seems like he was more on the concept than the person itself. The principle was, you know, that's what was addressed, not the person Yudhishthira Maharaj, but the concept of the principle of morality against the spiritual principle. So that, thank you very much, Vidagdha Madhva, for that. It's quite interesting.
That's a good adjustment. I appreciate that. I was looking for something like that. I appreciate that. And also I appreciate your class, Dineshwar Prabhu, and there's a big movement in India right now against the corruption of the government. I mean, probably one of the most corrupt governments in the world is the Indian government.
Who's leading that? BJP or RSS or who?
No, there's some, this guy has gone on a fast. They arrested him and about 1,000 other protesters, and it caused an uproar all over the country. But he was doing this a while back. He was demanding that they, they investigate their own corruption, that they make some sort of a committee or something to at least, you know, try to catch some of these people that are just outrageously corrupt. And I was in India at the time, and there were some devotees that went over from Chaitanya Gaudiya Math. They were in Delhi, and they were a European, Swiss devotee. And another devotee went over, and they, media was there, and the media immediately saw the Western devotees, and they started to ask them what they thought about the whole thing. And, you know, he had an opportunity to say something, and so he's on Indian television saying, you know, I came to India for spiritual values, you know, to dedicate my life spiritually, and now I'm, you know, and I'm seeing this, you know, these things are going on, but actually, you know, it means that people have to take up, you know, the Vedic culture again, you know, and take it seriously. And so he got an opportunity to say something. And also the people were so in a celebrating mood because the government had caved in and they said, okay, we're going to create a bill, you know, or we're going to punish the culprits that are all corrupt and everything. And so everybody was in this festive mood. So they started a kirtan, and everybody naturally joined in that kirtan.
Sorry.
Because they were, you know, so Prabhupada says we're opportunists, you know, so whenever there's a time like this, and it's an ongoing thing, but when these people do gather, there's an opportunity, at least in India, to start the people chanting, because they're just sitting there anyway.
Yeah.
They all know them.
At the beginning of the first Gulf War back in 91, I took a group of devotees to the federal building in Los Angeles. There was a big protest there. So I took a kirtan party there. And so we were, you know, everybody else, they were speaking and so on. But we were just doing our Harinam there. And unfortunately, it's not like India. Not, you know, some people joined in, but not very many. But later, after we finished the kirtan, many, many people came and thanked us for being there.
Right.
And, you know, they had the impression that we were there, maybe, you know, politically, that, you know, that we were showing some kind of political support. But basically, you know, we were there for the point of bringing Krishna into the Krishna consciousness there so that people could, you know, maybe we could help them to understand that, you know, God is all powerful. He's the person that we have to go to in these situations.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else? Thank you for the opportunity to share, have your association. Srila Prabhupada Ki.
Jai, thank you, Prabhu, very much. Hare Krishna. All glories to your preaching around the world.
Hare Krishna.
It's
a great talk.
Bye, Prabhuji.
Hare
Krishna. Thank you. Very nice class. Hare Paul.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Paul.
Okay, Hare Krishna, Prabhu. See everybody soon. Hare Paul.